Welcome one, welcome all to episode 221 of the Xbox Expansion Pass, recorded on Saturday, March 30th, 2024. I'm your host, Luke Lore, the Insipid Ghost, joined by my co-host, the Intrepid, Captain Logan. And in this episode, we're chatting about new Xbox hardware, Embracer Group up to their old antics, and should the Xbox brand be on Broadway? As always, we hope you enjoy the show. Logan, we like to start the show by offering words of kindness to those who have made our gaming weeks better. But first, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. It's been an interesting week in news for gaming. But I feel like most of my time has been spent trying to grind out that Call of Duty Battle Pass, because I've got like 9 tiers left and 3 days to do it with double XP. So I'm close.
So, been doing the same thing. I'm at 91%. I will tell you the secret, because I've gone 30% in the last 2 days, 3 days, four days, maybe. Warzone, we've not been playing Warzone. There are so many just open caches, weeklies, that Kev and I are just flying there. And we had a blast. Suddy, Kev and I played Warzone last night. We had such a blast, because they were both like, all right, Luke, we're going to put up with you wanting to play something. Just because, no, we had an absolute blast. It was a really good time. So
that's too funny.
Yeah, it's much less intense, I think, than when we were worried about. You know, like, there's a sweat that can come with it. No, we had a good old time. We were doing well, having fun.
Interesting. So, yeah, because that's always, like, my experience of, like, back in, I think the last time I dipped my toe into Warzone was Black Ops 3 when they first introduced it. Mm-hmm. Bro, it was sweaty. It was like, why are these guys so, I don't know if it's like the slow decline of like Call of Duty over the years, but
well, I don't think it's declined at all.
I'm speaking from the perspective of the elitists who miss the bygone days of Call of Duty. The footsteps, you can never hear these people's footsteps. What's going on? I can't hear anyone's. My game's going to be amazing. I can't hear anybody's damn footsteps in this game. I'm not talking about anyone in particular, whoever filmed in a bathroom. So like the idea of like going into Warzone is just like, I kind of like the Fortnite, because it's just a little bit more chill. But if Warzone's chill, then I'm like, I mean, that's a lot of XP and I need to get that done. So maybe that's what I take a look at this weekend.
Absolutely. That's what you do. Because we, I want to say about Call of Duty, because I think Call of Duty gets a bad rap in general, because it's the popular thing, right? And COD, you know, Activision brought with it its own level of
I'm drinking angst from my Xbox first party Blizzard mug.
There you go. I see that. But yeah, Activision got a bad rap. Call of Duty, I think, gets a bad rap. But this, you buy Call of Duty right now, you get a campaign, you get multiplayer, you get zombies, you get Warzone
zombies,
and the battle pass is cross progression. If you do Warzone mobile, which is free to play, and you have a battle pass in any of the ones, they all cross progress. There is so much right about Call of Duty that it doesn't get credit for, that I get a little irked at it. And I thoroughly enjoy Modern Warfare. I'm not in looking forward to Black Ops. I prefer Modern Warfare. But that's not the massive, but like so many people play across all these methods, and like you can progress your battle pass, zombies, multiplayer, Warzone, mobile, 4 ways to progress, and they all have dailies, weeklies, and everything. And it's not work, like you're just playing, you're gonna unlock these things. And so I think that's a nice
I want to push back a little bit on the whole work thing, because I do think
some of
like the weapons that they ask you to work on are specific to the season, that they like the Hollinger and the Haymaker and the Longbow are kind of like the weapons to be like messing around with this season, and they're given mods and attachments for it. So I think that there is like, you kind of have to focus on stuff maybe that you don't want to use on a regular basis, but you might find something in there that you like as well too. But I think that's kind of like most games.
That's so I was thinking about that because Kevin and I had a good conversation about that. Joe as well. We were talking about, like, is it work or is it to push you a little out of your comfort zone and keep the game from evolving into a meta? Because if you don't worry about progressing your stuff, you've got a meta, you've got your power weapons and stuff. But if you're constantly pushed to try new things and do these unlocks, then what you get is a more even experience and you're diversifying your gameplay every time, which I have found that I enjoy. I used to not want to do that. I used to have that face and be like, no, I'm going to stick with what I like. Yeah. But I have found that in order to keep it fresh, trying new weapons, and this goes for Fortnite, this goes for any game with a pass.
Yeah.
It's, think about Helldivers. I don't want to use the same stratagems only. I want to try new stuff. And when it, COD is, I think, especially good at pushing people to diversify because of those things. And I don't think of it as work unless we are, like, Kev likes small maps, you like large ones. If you're playing the stuff that you don't want to play and you're getting your ass kicked, that's a little different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That feels like work. But if you're just diversifying your experience, I think it's a little bit different. And I would be very curious to know what people listening think, because I think that's an old versus young thing. The youth, they're all about, like Gen Alpha, they're cool, try new things. This is the power, go, go, go. The meta is, I think, the olds.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what is new?
No, let's do that in our big one, because I think COD was our starter topic.
Oh.
I see you transitioning. I appreciate you.
Shut me down. All right.
I'm sorry. I appreciate your transition, but I want to take a moment and let our patrons know how much we appreciate them. Our tier 2 and 3 shout outs for this week. And also, I've been getting a lot of feedback. Patreon's not for me, but I want to thank you. So I opened up channel memberships on YouTube, super chats, super thanks or whatever. So Patreon's not your jam. That's an option for you. It'll still get you into the Discord. I'm still working through the logistics there. They are live now. But as I work to make the show go live, I'm hoping to have that done by next week. So I'm on spring break. That is something I'm working towards. That's a goal, right? In order to try to connect with our listeners, because socials are not what they were, algorithms, etc. So I'm going to try that and see if it works. But if Patreon's not your jam and you want to try YouTube channel memberships, super chats, those are there now. It's a way to say thank you, but please feel no obligation. I'm just trying stuff to see how it works. That's all it is.
Yeah. The next step, if this doesn't work, is OnlyFans. Luke is going to be releasing those sweet, sweet feet pics that I get access to.
That's true.
So that's true. That's kind of on the docket. I'm just letting y'all know, if YouTube goes well, we're going to have to find new storefronts.
Mm-hmm. And not for nothing, my left foot is a good half inch bigger than my right. It's a real thing. I do want to give our words of kindness to...
Do you waddle?
No.
Okay.
No. That's just kind of a thing. It's been strange. Words of kindness to our patrons this week, because I have just so thoroughly enjoyed our Discord, and they've been doing a great job at keeping me updated on all of the things going on. And a specific shout out to Clint Coombs, who just started his own podcast, which is really
cool. Oh, you stole mine.
Oh, did I?
That's fine. I got a backup.
All right, cool. Let me give our tier 2 and 3 shout outs this week. First, of course, Chris 1H1D, Nicholas Johnson, Ellery Woods Parker III, Nicholas Downey, Rob Frawley II, Tao Zochi, Xbox Skittle, Maddo 1606, Randall Thor 19, Silkenit, Rick Gaffney, Hafrican aka Charles Jones, Game Positive, Jam Pack Sam, Matt Valdez, Neo Prime 33, Rick Davis, Red Beast, Xbox Mike 29, Suddy, I guess, Brendan Myers, aka The Winter Gamer, Sony's VP of Marketing, Kevin Butler, Clint Coombs, DJ Hero, and Dano 12. Thank you guys for supporting Xbox Expansion Pass at patreon.com/Xbox Expansion Pass. Appreciate you. There you go.
Yeah.
Who's your shout out?
My shout out is, well, I wanted to shout out Clint because starting a podcast is always kind of scary. You're never quite sure like what to expect. Mm-hmm. And my recommendation to anyone that's starting a podcast, just stick with it. Just get a schedule and make every episode on time every single week for as long as you can.
Yeah.
But no, my, I wanted to give a shout out to, my zombie brother out there. The Lord Master, Sir James Suddy Esquire, who, has been working with me on the Call of Duty Battle Pass, and given that you and Kev and them, like, I know Kev doesn't really like zombies as much. Mm-hmm. We discovered that, you know, you like zombies, but we haven't really dove into zombies too often.
Right.
But Suddy has been that consummate professional when it comes to communicating with me, and we've been playing zombies a lot together, and that is genuinely like one of my favorite modes.
Such a relaxing, fun mode.
I had a lot of good time. Like, I had like some little ones with me the other day. They had like one level one plate armor, and I was like running around and getting them gear and getting them like levels and stuff like that. It was just a fun time, just like murking zombies. Something about that, just very entertaining. Maybe it's the Left 4 Dead in me that is like I just like mowing hordes of zombies down, and it's not a World War Z kind of pressure.
I just said this 3-4 minutes ago, but I do not like the vitriol that Call of Duty gets as a brand, because they have something for everybody. Like, zombies is a great experience. It's really fun. I love DMZ zombies and what they've done with Modern Warfare zombies on Warzone Mobile, which just launched. You can play multiplayer, you can play Warzone, and it's really well done, especially with a backbone. It feels like I'm playing my Vita. I loved Vita. If any of you guys are PS Vita fans, playing on your mobile with a backbone in Warzone Mobile feels like Killzone Mercenary, if not better. That's awesome. Like, I love that. And I love that you're able to go that battle pass in whichever way you want. Like, that makes me happy.
Yeah, me too. But Suddy's been nice enough to jump in during his game sessions and work with me on our battle passes and stuff. So it's been like, I'm looking at the clock, and it's like April 2nd is coming sooner and sooner. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, next is like the Halo is done at 4/4. That's when their battle pass ends. Mm-hmm. And then it's like Sea of Thieves on like the end of April, but like Diablo 4 is ending in April. So I'm like, I keep looking at all these battle pass dates. It's slowly creeping up.
If you started your Halo one, don't worry about it. It'll stay, I believe.
Yeah.
Or if you pay $5 for the premium or whatever, it never leaves or something like that. There's a really healthy way to support Halo without it feeling like work to progress your battle pass.
That's good, because the game's bad.
The game's great. Too little, too late, but it's great. So it goes.
I kid.
I will say, if you guys are interested in being in our Patreon episode, we're going to record this Tuesday evening. So if you're a patron, you want to record on our community episode for March, like our looking back on March episode, feel free to join us for that one. Check out Logan's controller review, which I think is amazing. We even got great feedback from the PR company, which I enjoyed. So that was a good time there. And I'm working on some interviews. A lot of people have pinged me, hey, will you talk to this person, that person? So yes, I will. I've reached out to a number of them. I think Tales of Iron is coming up soon, and a few others. So fingers crossed there. Logan, it wasn't a big week in terms of gaming news, which I liked. There were some rumor things here and there, but I did catch a couple stories that, you know, just kind of shined out above the others. First, Embracer Group is selling Gearbox, which to me makes good sense given Embracer's extreme troubles, and they have been truly a back-end menace on gaming as a whole. But seeing that they're selling Gearbox to Take-Two Interactive for $460 million feels like a big steal to me, because they're picking up, of course, Borderlands is the big one, but there's a lot of other IP that come with Gearbox. Brothers in Arms is in my mind. There's things they could do with it, but Take-Two Interactive seems like a good fit. I think this is a nice thing to know that Gearbox might have a second shot. I know Randy Pitchford is no one's favorite, including my own, but
he's just creepy, dude. I don't know.
I would love to talk to him to confirm or not, but he just seems an odd, eccentric person. And not for nothing, I've interviewed a lot of people in gaming, and sometimes those brilliant people are eccentric. Odd and strange.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So take that for what you will. But I wasn't bothered by that. How about you?
I thought it was really cool. Yeah. I'm fine with this. I think that Take-Two makes sense as far as a publisher goes. I think that Gearbox, it's very interesting to hear this right in amidst the Polygon interview that we're going to be diving into, because I think that there's some correlation there. But as far as I understand it, Gearbox still wholly owned by Randy Pitchford, not a studio that has stock in it. And feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I've never heard of Gearbox going public. And I would be happy to be, you know, given some facts on that. If I haven't done my research, so forgive me, but based on experience, Gearbox is still one of the few studios out there that is not like gone public for shareholders, which means that they're not beholden to, you know, ever growing profits the way everyone else seems to be.
Yeah.
So hearing them like getting picked up and, you know, they've made a lot of money from what I understand, because they were purchased for a heck of a lot of money from Embracer. Mm-hmm. And now Gearbox is buying them from Embracer. So Embracer's losing a lot of money, but I'm sure the Gearbox is probably making out like a bandit on this. But good for Gearbox in this case. What'd you see?
Yeah. Well, I saw that there were comments about like how Gearbox is in Texas and that's a great place for it to be because game development is so expensive. Being in some of those big hub cities is so expensive that being out there, pardon me, makes good sense. And so like, maybe so. What's that?
Worked for id Software.
It did. It worked for a number of different companies to be kind of in these out and about places, I guess. But gaming's just in this big, huge flux and change. And I'm certainly Embracer is a symptom of that change. Not necessarily a cause of it, but it is fascinating to watch.
I think Embracer is a victim of its own dreams and ambitions. Like I think they wanted to have so much IP that they were just scooping stuff up left and right.
Yeah.
And now they're seeing like the reality of it feels like Embracer is that young couple out there trying to flip houses. And they're spending, you know, like all day and all night trying to refurbish these homes for as little as they can to try and make a profit on them. Mm-hmm. And Embracer like realized like the house they're trying to flip, this game industry that they're trying to flip is just not, it requires a lot more renovation than they initially expected.
Yeah.
And they're going to end up losing a lot on this. Mm-hmm. But they still got to flip it because they can't hold on to that kind of equity. So it's a symptom of I think people coming into the industry thinking they can change it and realizing that it's just not something that is that easy. There's no simple fix.
Yeah,
which really cracks me up when I see the comments on like the Polygon interview with
Phil Spencer.
Oh my God, I won't even repeat the name that was going in my head because it doesn't make any damn sense at all.
Shuhei Yoshida.
Steve Jobs. It's like, oh yeah, that interview with Steve Jobs that happened in 2024. But yeah, no, I think it's I think we'll have to kind of see how Take-Two treats Gearbox. I did like the speculation or the hints that there was going to be another Borderlands game that was going to get put into production. Because
how can there not be? What else does Gearbox have going for it that's relevant? Because Brothers in Arms is cool, but like, what else has it got?
I would say like a traditional Borderlands game is something that people would like, but I think that 3 just didn't do it. But I think what they learned from Tiny Tina's Wonderland can help impact their next Borderlands game, the proper installments, in a way that they can kind of freshen up the formula, you know, add a little more spice into that recipe.
Everybody I know that's played Borderlands 3 loved it, speaks volumes of it, but it didn't catch the main,
like,
the masses. But I think it's so hard to catch the masses. And that does tie into what Phil Spencer was saying, is like catching the masses is such a difficult thing. And that's the goal of so many industry elements now, because you know what's the word on the street is that the gold rush of Game Pass has dried up for indies. That's the scuttlebutt at GDC, was that it's harder and harder for indie games to get those massive deals for Game Pass, or those big exclusive deals for Game Pass and the Epic Game Store, same word and doctrine.
Yeah,
because it's so hard to break the mold. Break through Call of Duty, break through Fortnite, break through Diablo. Like, there are these niches, and short of an implosion, I think, a la Destiny, you're just breaking through doesn't work. You can have great games exist and just not crack the code to get seen. And I think that is
I think the code's been broken. I think they've understood the recipe.
Really?
Yeah.
Because Helldivers and Pal World are the word, but for every Helldivers and Pal World, you've got 10 others that no one's heard of.
True, but I think the thing behind that is really does come down to marketing, because we've seen games that have cracked the code that haven't really been spotlight, but then something will happen and a zeitgeist movement will come up and we'll see like Among Us, and then Among Us will go really, really well and really, really hard. But then as soon as something else comes out, they'll kind of move to that. Or if the situation changes, like I think it's easy to be able to pick up like what's going on. It's why a lot of these studios are making games that are live service games that are free to play with, you know, battle pass systems afterwards, is because that is what actually works. You know, you put a gun in people's hands and you give them a battle pass and you give them free access. Look at the top, Ames was talking about this the other day. You know, look at the top 10 games that are the best sellers on any console, and it's all going to be the free to play games that have guns. So the code I think is cracked. I think the difference is what is the flavor that is going to be of interest in the month that gamers are looking for something that has a new flavor.
That's fair. I just don't know. I don't even have a good answer. I don't know if the code is cracked. I don't know that I subscribe to that idea, but I understand everything you're saying. It's just that I don't know. What do we mean by code being cracked? Like getting a massive new audience or being financially successful? Do you want all the monies or some of the monies?
I think understanding what gamers are looking for to make something stand out. I think the flavor for Helldivers is it's still a gun game. You're still going and shooting and killing things. That's the base that you have. Mm-hmm. The flavor on top of it is the Starship Troopers parody. Mm-hmm. Pal World, it's still shooting, you're still killing things, you're still going out there and smacking things and gathering supplies and stuff like that, but the flavor of it is a Pokemon that's HD. Mm-hmm. That you can't get from Nintendo. Mm-hmm. I think the base starts out very similar. The flavor is really going to be the thing that you have to work out, like what is the thing that will evoke emotion, that will hit that nostalgia without just straight up plagiarism. Mm. And get people invested in it to create your own thing. Like it can be a new IP, but it has to be close enough aligned to something that people are already in love with and familiar with, mm-hmm. that it treads that line of this is new, but it's just similar enough to like hit those nostalgia points for you to make you like invested, because it reminds you of something that you do love and it's not the thing that you already have that you're bored with.
Okay, fair enough. I feel like that's something to watch, because I don't think management always knows that stuff, you know.
True, but I also think that there's like a give and take, and I think that this was something that you know, we've had this discussion multiple times. You know, do you remake a game so that you can make a fresh game in the future? Like how many Resident Evils do we got to remake here so we can get a
Resident Evil 9?
No, I'm thinking Dino Crisis, yes, but more the fresh IP that they're coming out with. What's the I can't think of the game that's coming out recently. It's like the spirit cleansing one. It's like the ARPG.
I know what you're speaking of, but I have no idea, because it's a weird name of it.
But there's also Exoprimal. Like, you know, how many Resident Evils do you got to remake to get an Exoprimal out the door?
Yeah, that's. I mean, I understand your point. Your point is taken well there. And now I'll kind of loop that back to the Phil Spencer Polygon element of there are barriers for gamers and for game companies, and that they have to crack. Mm-hmm. There's friction between creators, between players, and they've got to find a way to modernize their ecosystem and remove those barriers. And that means putting Xbox in many places. And I think a lot of his comments that in this Polygon interview from GDC were picked up and people ran with it as a, you know, Phil Spencer wants a handheld. He wants to see the Xbox experience in other places. And what is the Xbox experience? And in paraphrased statement, he was saying that it's your games that you own, your saves in a native app everywhere. And that's a paraphrased version, but I totally agree with him. As someone who is, I hit the backbone button on my phone, which, by the way, got a new Pixel 8. What up? Very excited about it. Pixel 8 Pro upgraded. Woo. And then my garage broke, but I hit the backbone button, and that is a great app. If you don't have it, the backbone app is amazing, and it links automatically into Steam, Steam, xCloud, and Google Play, or I'm sure the Apple equivalent if you're on there. And all my games are just right there. Click, I'm in. It feels like I'm playing Xbox on my phone in Vita fashion, which is really cool. And he was talking about that, which has caused people to say, like, should we have a native Xbox handheld? Would it sell? Would it not? And to my way of thinking, you don't need one, but you do need one. It should be a hybrid docked thing like a Switch.
Yeah.
If you're going to next element of Xbox and survive. But to me, they have diversified their business so well to prepare for this flatline console install base. Because I think it was last week we talked about there's a 40%, 47% dip or something like that in console sales in Europe. And truly, the console space across all platforms is not expanding. Gaming is expanding, but the console space is not. And Xbox, to me, failed the console space and wisely pivoted appropriately to become a third-party cloud-based approach. That's why you have Activision. That's why you have all these other elements that are... Xbox is fine. The Xbox box is gone. It's continually my sentiment.
Yeah, and I've heard that. But I disagree to an extent that the Xbox box itself is gone. I think that there's always going to be a market for that. And I think that we've seen how that market can shift. I think that being able to have a powerhouse system will always be in a way that is kind of like a closed ecosystem, the way like an Xbox or a PS5 is. People want to have something that is tangibly accessible to them without having to go down the route of a PC. And having that in a small form factor behind your TV does say a lot to like how we want to ingest our content. And in speculating that the Switch is the end all be all for all hardware really does do a disservice to the folks that love having the large screen with the, you know, the high resolution and the high frame rates without having to sacrifice that living room experience. So I don't think that it's gone. I just think that it's degraded because of where people try to find their content.
I'm thinking a lot about Gen Z, Gen Alpha.
Yeah.
Consoles are unimportant to them. To us, millennials, dude, I want that console. I want that peak. I want that console. I'm not in the PC category, but Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they want a PC or they want a mobile. That seems to be the thing that I consistently see. And that I would point to anyone who's in doubt of that. Look at the strategies. Look at the strategies of Xbox as they pivot.
I'm curious. Do you think that part of this is due to just like the current state of our economy? And like if we had a stronger economy and people had more expendable cash, do you think that they would be relying less on their one screen to fill everything and they would have the money to be able to afford some of these bigger luxuries?
I think there is merit in that. And yes, but not to a degree that it would stop the momentum towards a mobile non-console space. So yes, I think that is a factor, but I do not think it is a full-on deterrent of where we are headed, because the Switch taught young people and parents that you can have a device that docks and you play games and you walk around it and you play games.
Yeah.
That informed and taught the masses. And it's been out for like what, 10 years or something? No, it's been like seven or eight years.
2017.
Okay. So 7 years. 7 years. Yeah, I was like, I couldn't remember. I was like, was it March 2017?
Who's the teacher, ladies and gentlemen?
I was trying to remember like what month it came out. But March in short,
3rd.
We've informed an entire generation that you can play. How many? I see so many parents that instead of parenting their children, they hand them a tablet or a phone. Here, play with this.
Yeah, but that's a false narrative, though.
No, it is not. What? No, it is not.
No, I'm saying like that has been the case ever since TV has ever been created, and before that it was books. Because I remember growing up and being completely occupied from like 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday mornings with cartoons. I don't think I ever actually saw my parents on Saturday morning. They were probably off doing something. I have no clue what was going on. But I think you're supporting
my point. You learned to be in front of a TV.
Yes.
Whereas these kids have learned to be on a tablet or a phone for their entertainment.
So it's okay. So it's more about them where they find their screens.
Yes.
I blame Gen X on this.
Yes, absolutely.
They failed raising their kids on a console system.
That's right. We are personally attacking every Gen X parent that listens to this show. Just kidding. Patreon.com/.
You worked hard, but you're lazy.
It is a consistently interesting narrative. But regardless, the idea of a Xbox handheld to me is a great idea if it's hybridized. We saw pictures of a all digital Series X, which is just white with no disc port. Maybe that's real, maybe not. It does not look like the cylindrical thing that was shown by Xbox.
I think it's much easier to keep that form factor. You know, you've already got the molds and stuff ordered and purchased for that kind of thing. Like, why not just keep the
and the idea of wraps, which they seem to have abandoned post Starfield.
I told everyone, anyone that ever came at me about like the wraps being stupid, I want y'all to like think about yourselves right now. Like, you bought all those camo ones, you bought that Starfield one. Congratulations. That thing's going to rot in like 5 years and you're going to like sit there holding its decrepit pieces of plastic together thinking, man, I wish I just had like a limited edition Halo Xbox that has like an actual custom shell instead of whatever this wrap thing was. That was a dumb idea.
I don't think it was a dumb idea, but I definitely don't think it's as good as a console. Like,
it's not as good as a console, and I can tell that the reason that they threw this together was because they knew that they wanted to get something like a limited edition Starfield system out, but they couldn't for whatever reason. So the wrap was the best thing for them to try and like pitch an idea of how to get around that, and then they threw in the white and blue camos just to be like, we're going to be doing a series of this. We're going to be releasing all kinds of different things. And then I was like, watch, no one's going to buy these stupid things. Everyone's just going to buy the one Starfield one, praise it. And then no one's going to care about it in the future. And no one's going to be wondering why there's not more or why they haven't come out with any different ones ever since then. And they haven't. And no one has.
I wonder if we'll even see Hellblade or Avowed.
No. Actually, I can see Avowed, yes, because they've already put out like a dynamic background for that where they haven't for Hellblade. So I think they are 100% banking on the fact that Obsidian is a really good studio and they know that that game is going to be pretty big and that they're probably going to want to have like some marketing around it. So yes, I 100% expect like a custom Series S to be given away on Twitter and for them to do some sort of special thing for Avowed.
I will tell you this right now. I have zero confidence in Avowed. Zero. That gameplay did not look enticing. I don't think anybody's going to get thrilled for that.
No, I think they will. I think the difference is I don't think that it's going to be frenetic enough for you.
For me personally or for the masses?
For you personally.
Okay, I agree with that.
I don't think that Luke Lore is going to be someone who falls into that world. But I do think that people are yearning for something like that. We've seen that with like Baldur's Gate and Dragon's Dogma 2. I think that people do want that Skyrim game. And I think that this will scratch that itch very, very well.
That reminds me of just my curiosities around Starfield, because I loved Starfield, but did it disappoint? I don't think it did. I don't, like, people wanted it to be Skyrim. Skyrim cannot exist in these modern times the way that it once did. And it took years for Skyrim to be the legend that it is. So I'm really fascinated to watch when the expansion comes for Starfield.
Me too. I think that Starfield did well. I don't think that it hit the way it, like, I don't think it is the game of the generation.
No.
I actually think that if anything, I honestly, this is going to be heresy. I actually think that Cyberpunk 2077 is the game of the generation.
Really? I don't think there is one. I think the Series SX PS5 generation has been incrementally better than the 1 and the 4 because we just haven't had the game. We don't have that one thing that truly rallies people. And I don't know that we ever will. That's not true. I don't know that we're going to this generation. I think this generation is, despite having superior hardware, and like to me, the Series SX is the best hardware Xbox has ever produced. We have the best Xbox that has ever been produced. We have back and pat. We have Play Anywhere. We have cloud. We have so many great things for it. But I just don't think, like, nobody wants to jump ecosystems. I will die before I switch to an iPhone. Right? I don't see people switching out of their comfort zones. Like, I just have no desire to switch. And I don't think most people do. I think they made the decision.
I could easily switch because Apple TV is an app that you can download on any platform now. And that's where a majority of my movie purchases have ever been. So I feel like I have in most of my content is actually coming from streaming anyway. So I feel like I could very easily, like, there aren't too many paid apps that I have that I'd be like, oh man, I can't believe I bought Flappy Bird. I'm never going to be able to have Flappy Bird transfer over. What am I going to do? Like, none of the apps I buy are exclusive to one ecosystem or paid anymore. Mm. I think the last app that I paid for that wasn't like a subscription service to something that is like Duolingo is the last thing I paid for, right? But that's because I'm paying for like an actual service of like I want to learn a language. It's like a class in my mind. But the last game that I bought was the Mario game that they put out, like the one-handed Mario game. And that was a great game.
Mario Run. That was a blast.
Mario. Yeah, but it was like 5 years ago, bro.
That's fair. I play mobile all the time. Like, I regularly put money into the mobile space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoy
the mobile. You're part space. Of the problem. So I'm just saying that to try and rally the people who are against mobile gaming. I have no cares whether or not you do or don't.
There's a world now where, like I said, it's a Vita now. I love picking up my phone. Like, I'm playing games like I would on my Vita.
Oh, don't get me wrong, man. I was championing Diablo Immortal when it was still like in beta. And I think I was like telling people, I'm like, guys, this game plays really well. It's Diablo 3 on mobile. Like, if you haven't got a Switch or this was before the Steam Deck. Like, we didn't have a Steam Deck or a ROG Ally. We didn't have like cool stuff like a Logitech G Cloud. Like, we were just like, it was our phones or the Switch. And that was like the two options we had. So if you didn't have a Switch, man, I was like, man, Diablo Immortal is going to be really fun. It's Diablo 3 without, you know, a little more zoomed in, a little bit bigger, without the need to have like a Nintendo Switch. And it's Diablo on the go. But then, you know, we started getting all these handhelds out. And that's why, honestly, like, I think that Xbox should have a handheld. I think the idea of having a handheld would be beneficial. I think that they ought to try and figure out how to make it something that comes with a dock, because I think that the Steam selling the Steam Deck without the dock is a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I think that if they go that route, make it with a dock, make it something that has a really good battery life and that can run games natively, give it the power of like a stronger Series S for the next gens. Keep the idea of the Series S, but keep it alive in like a small handheld dockable form. Make that your all digital machine, and then come out with the next Xbox Series X to have like the improved, you know, RDNA or whatever, you know, all the technical specs and stuff like that. So you still have that market covered as well too.
Yeah, I agree. Xbox is this weird thing. Like, there are days where I am so stoked for the brand and days where I'm like, what are you doing? Are we done? And it's, maybe that's me. Maybe I'm stuck in the middle, but it's cool to watch. Yeah. It is. I am fearful of its future, but not because I think Xbox is going away. There's not a chance that it goes away. The box is going away, but the box for all of them is going away. It's just a matter of when, how, and everything else. I think it's slower than we thought. I thought it'd be done by next gen, but it's not. So
I don't think that future, like I've seen a lot of people talking about like when this is going to happen. A lot of people are real, like we just barely, like I've been hearing the advertising going on, but stupid ISPs are like, we just upgraded our data to give you faster speeds. It's like, no, the government changed the rules and regulations around what's considered broadband. So you had to conform. You aren't,
it's not
giving
even
us,
that fast.
It's not even that fast, you stupid idiots. Yeah. Oh my God. So I think the infrastructure and ISPs are the things that are holding back this future. Like they're the ones. Until the government forces them to get with the picture and make gigabit the standard broadband, so that all and kids out there, there are a lot of old people in the government right now. There's going to be a huge wash. There's going to be just a flood of empty seats if there's like another really bad flu. So we got to fill them spots. Because we're the only ones that actually, and speaking as an old, they're the only ones that actually know like what actual proper internet speed is. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have these futures where your phone is the main device, you got to start figuring out how to get these ISPs to conform to government regulations. The only way to do that is through legislation.
Oh boy, here we are. I'm announcing a new show to go along with channel memberships. You too can hear Logan's Legislation, which I think would be a dope ass show, by the way. Logan's Legislation. And you just get to rant about Xbox, because it's not Sea of Thieves only. You could just have a rant show. I would do that. Oh,
I'm so tired of not having control over my media and feeling like a pirate by having to like have physical backups and digital copies of all my movies and stuff, because I don't trust companies to actually like respect the digital downloads that I've purchased. Mm-hmm. Because there's no legislation guarding me from that kind of protection,
a
that
new
kind of issue.
Show called Logan's Legislation. I want it. I want it.
It's where I just talk and don't act.
Yeah, it'd be great. Are you kidding me?
I just need like a soapbox on the corner with a sign that says, God thinks that you should be working harder on your digital legislation.
The episode 2 about battle passes. And he just goes,
can we talk about battle passes?
No, we just did this.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, I would watch a rant video from you. last week I vented about how like a keyboard and mouse for xCloud isn't a thing.
Yeah.
Like 2 days later, they were like, keyboard and mouse is coming for cloud. I was like, change. That's right.
See,
here we are.
I was super excited to see this. I honestly thought that it was a thing that we had already had like access to at some point. Mm-hmm. And it might've just been like in insider ring or something. But I was really happy to see this, because I think this is how we get closer and closer to being able to play like all of our games mm-hmm. that we own, not in Game Pass, but through Game Pass.
I agree. I agree. Fully.
I think that's how we get there. But man, yeah, I'm waiting for, I tried to do it. I jumped on Bing and I was like, Sea of Thieves. And then it said, would you like to play? And I said, yes, let's play a game. And I clicked play. And then it was like, would you like to attach the controller? I was like, no, I don't want a controller.
Probably
I want
wasn't
a
ready
mouse
yet.
And keyboard.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready.
Yeah. But I do think that's the way to do it. Like, that's the way to do it. I'm telling you.
It's getting there.
It is getting there. It is getting there. Did you see the new Marvel game? Marvel Rivals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that really fancy trailer.
It was, so if for anybody that's not watching, coming to PC only at the moment, but there's no way it skips consoles. It's an Overwatch Paladins clone with Marvel characters.
Yeah.
It looks cool, but like, come on now. We've seen Marvel tank with Avengers. We've seen DC tank with Suicide Squad. These live service chasing elements, like, you got to be careful. Like, I'm very, very cautious about it. But I'll also say it looked fun. But, like, would I stick with it? No. And I love superheroes.
I feel like the shooter, like the hero shooter genre, honestly, is kind of like played its part.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen a lot come and go. Overwatch 2 has recently confirmed that they have just decimated the PvE like aspect of their game.
People bought that and it's gone.
Like, now you're upset about purchasing content that doesn't ever get delivered. Where were you when Redfall was announcing two other characters?
There is no one that has ever said Redfall's characters aren't coming. Not a single person has said it. And side note, I saw an article or two last week that said people were like, hey, I jumped into Redfall. This game's really good now. And yeah. I wonder. It had a very Dishonored feel, they were saying, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never heard that stuff's canceled. Whereas with Overwatch, it's been canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Logan's Legislation, episode 3.
I'm just saying, dude, like you're picking like, you're like, oh, I can't believe people bought that content. That was like,
it's based on evidence. If they cancel that Redfall bite back stuff, then we have a problem. Overwatch has canceled the PvE stuff. That's a problem. Yeah. Versus like guesstimates. That's the difference.
We're coming up on a year, buddy. 1 year since the launch of Redfall.
Redfall shouldn't have launched last year. It should have launched this year or early accessed at Halloween, like we've said.
Oh, God. Yeah, that patch right around Halloween was preem.
It was such a good patch.
That was like the perfect timing, man. They should have launched the game then with the patch. It would have been amazing. It wouldn't have mattered how close to Starfield it was. It would have been really good. They need to figure out how to make it so that you can like drop in and drop out of that game, though, because like the whole like having to quit your game to bring people in sucks. I'm sorry. That's the thing. That is the one pain point that I have with that game is that the boss battles aren't that great and that the drop in and drop out feature needs to be there for people to be able to like casually have fun in Redfall. But anyway,
Redfall, Halo Infinite, Starfield, Forza Motorsport, number of Xbox games this generation that have launched poorly and not reaching their potential is just so frustrating, because Halo Infinite in a great place now. Redfall, much better place than it once was. I have no knowledge of Forza Motorsport, and from what I hear, Starfield is improving, but like no one cares until the expansion, rather.
And this is why Phil Spencer needs to get kicked out of office.
I don't think Phil Spencer's done a bad job. I think he saved the Xbox brand.
No, I'm being facetious. Absolutely saved the Xbox brand. No, I agree. I'm being facetious. I think that at the moment, honestly, to kind of tie it into the Marvel Rivals game, I think we're in the same boat. The way we're talking about how and when Redfall launched or how and when Halo launched, I think Marvel Rivals is about 5 years too late to be able to do this kind of thing. I don't think that there's anything that those characters can do that can really, because we've seen like there are good Marvel games out there and they don't get nearly as much attention. Like Midnight Suns is a really good game. Even if you don't like tactics games like myself, you can admit Marvel's, you know, that is a really good game. But you look at like Rivals, and I think this is something that will just be a clone of games that have already done well and captured that market. And I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of upset because it's a Marvel IP. Now, if they had tried to do something where this was a tie-in to, if this was like a tie-in to X-Men 97, and instead of it being like a hero shooter, if it was like a 2D fighter,
I think you could have
captured a little more of that kind of like Marvel versus Capcom 2 like market, I think that would have been a smarter play. You know, get them 2D sprites going, nice HD ones. And I think you probably could have had a better game.
There's a good market for that kind of stuff in general. There's a Ninja Turtles game that was in the arcade that's coming to consoles in April. I think it's April. So soon, within 3 weeks, because Game Mill's doing it. And it's just the old game, but the 2012 Turtles that was in the arcade, but they're bringing it to consoles to recapitalize on that money. Shredder's Revenge did really well. People were calling for a Marvel version of that, like that treatment. I think the big budget AAA experiences with superheroes is not the way to go right now. Avengers and Suicide Squad are good examples of that. Spider-Man 2's return on investment didn't do well, despite to me thinking that's a better game. I actually had a good
I still haven't played that.
it's great. I really enjoy it, but it didn't do as well for Sony as they wanted it to, because the AAA space is just harder to be successful in. And so these lower budget, lower risk games, those 2D elements, those bringing old IP to bear, I think is a safer bet for waning franchises, which kind of, I think we've talked about that many times before, you know? Why not? If you want to, Suicide Squad's not the answer, but Batman people love, why not do a 2D rehash or a collection or something? That's a selfish thing that I want.
Let's go full 2D, man. Let's make this a Batman side scroller, like Batman Returns on the NES.
That's kind of what I'm saying, is like bring back that style for nostalgia purposes, but also people just, it's a lower risk, right? If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, you know?
Oh my God. I just had the best idea for a game. Have you seen on Twitter the game that the someone's making where it's like they're holding a Game Boy and you can play the Game Boy and it's a 2D side scroller, but you're in a 3D world, and the correlation between like what you see on the little Game Boy is exactly what's happening in the real world?
No, I have no idea what this is.
I'll send you a link, but it's really cool. The idea is that you're playing a 2D game, but you're in a 3D world, and everything that you do in the game translates directly into the 3D world, and the 3D world is being represented in the 2D thing. Can you imagine if you made a Batman game where you had like a kid with like a hood, and you know, he thought he was Batman, he had his little headphones on, and he's playing a Game Boy, and it's like a Batman game that is like a 2D side scroller, but you know, while that's happening, you're like, he's like actually walking around through Gotham City's streets, and he's like, what he's seeing on the game is being represented like in the actual Gotham City, but it's all like his imagination that's creating these fights that he's seeing.
I very much want to see that. That sounds like Captain Velvet Meteor, which is that indie game that I did the interview for. But I need to see it in action before I can truly understand it, I think.
That's fair.
You know?
It's a concept.
It's a really cool concept, though. Like, I dig it. I do dig it. So
I think something like that would be really fun. Anyway, but yeah, I think that getting back to like the Marvel Rivals thing, the lineups that they have, I think, are really good. I think that they've got some really good heroes kind of like put in there. Mm-hmm. I'd be very curious to see, because there's always, anytime you do this with comic book characters, man, people know exactly how powerful these characters are, and like what they can do, and all the little little magical things that have been written for them over the years. So it's like you look at Magneto and you're like, well, I'm pretty sure Magneto could take out just about half of these people.
Yeah. It's like, I don't think there would be any question. What are we doing? You know? Yeah.
Sorry, Hawkeye. I don't think you're gonna last too long against Magneto. And then it's like, I look at like Loki and I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure Spider-Man can't handle Loki.
The idea that Wolverine could ever do anything to Magneto is the most funny thing. It's like, so the guy made of metal can beat the guy that can control metal. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But comic books.
You look at the comic book series where Magneto ripped out all the adamantium and it was just bone skeleton kind of Wolverine, bone claw Wolverine.
Bonesaw is ready.
I didn't mean to invoke that. I'm so sorry.
It had to happen.
No.
Here's the question. Is this game is a PC only game? And we saw Christopher Dring from GameIndustry.biz get all types of flack this past week for reporting what he heard, not for taking a side. These foolish people threatening Chris. but for reporting that at GDC, he heard developers saying, we don't know why we bring stuff to Xbox. It doesn't sell there. It's a lot of resource. Does a game like this
talk to?
He didn't reveal which developers and which people he spoke to, which I think is a fair thing.
Talking to Square Enix. Yeah, exactly what he said makes sense. Why would Square Enix publish on?
Bigger question is why in general would a game come to Xbox if it doesn't sell there? Do you see a Marvel Rivals when it does go to console skipping an Xbox?
I could if they are straining to get development done in general. I could see them pushing this out to just PS5, but I don't think that that is up to them. I think that that is up to Marvel.
Yeah.
Very much in the same way that I think, MLB has very strict control over where their game gets published.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marvel's not a force to be reckoned with. Like, they'll grant you IP, but if they tell you to put it on Xbox and PlayStation 5, regardless of what it sells on Xbox, you're going to have to put that game on Xbox 5 or Xbox.
I tell you what, man, hindsight now from when we first talked about it, like, Blade's going multi-platform. Like, I don't see
you think
where,
so.
I think now. I don't think I used to think that. Right? Like, if you go back even to when we recorded, you were like, it's a Bethesda bleep bleep game. Like, we even did a YouTube short.
I think that there's okay. Like, I'm like, I think there's a difference between single player and multiplayer games. Like, Rivals is a multiplayer game. I think that needs the ability to breach across different barriers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Indiana Jones confirmed to be console exclusive. Spider-Man console exclusive. I think Blade is going to stay console exclusive because I think that that's what Marvel's okay with because it's a single player game.
For now, I don't know, man.
I think that there's a vast difference between the type of game that these are when you're looking at, like, what does this need to survive?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think Rivals survives just staying on PC, but I also don't think that Blade needs to survive outside of Xbox. I think that they've already sunk the cash into that. And I think Marvel is going to look for a return on investment, but I think that Xbox fans are hungry enough for that they will show up day one for Blade.
I hope that Blade gets a bite back edition.
Yeah.
I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
You want like a Whistler character to play as through the game?
Maybe 2 or 3 years after it launches. Sure.
Or what was his name? What was the Dane Cook character's name? King something?
I have no idea.
Blade 3. Fans out there, you got my back.
Anyway, Blade 3 Trinity, I think three people saw.
Yep. And the other two people that listened to this show who saw it will follow me up on this. I can't remember what his name was, but it was King.
Blade 2 was the best one, though.
Blade 2
was the best one. The combat was just unrivaled. It was so good. That Blade was peak snipes, really, peak martial arts. It was so good.
I don't know, man. I'm still
one was cooler, but two was better.
I'm still kind of partial to one. I recognize that the Deacon Frost was like the epitome of douche in the 90s. Like, I get that. I saw it. I felt it. But it was good to see him fall. And to be honest, like, I get that the CGI, we were still a little rough around the edges back then. Like, we can forgive them for that.
Yeah, it was fun.
Blood God. Yeah. Pearl. Yeah. But I don't know. Blade 2 is really good. I'm not going to deny that. But I still have a special place for Blade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. I do not have a special place for Blade Trinity. With the moment the cops started finding out about the vampires, I was like, I'm out. Done.
I got to find that name now. That's bugging me. Keep going.
We got some good listener questions this week. First, this one from Guy at Can You Dig It on Twitter. Gave us very kind words as well. What's up, Guy? He says, where do you see the Xbox brand 7 to 10 years from now? I think you have a niche box and you're logging in. I think that's what's happening. That's the 10-year route. 7 years, I think you still have a box, but it's all digital. I don't think you have a physical box. I think you have an all digital. And you're logging into Xbox.
I still think that we have physical boxes. I think that the ecosystem has definitely bridged a couple areas. And I think, you know what? First off, I gotta correct myself on this. This is a live edit. So Ryan Reynolds was actually Hannibal King in Blade Trinity. It wasn't Dane Cook. I was thinking of Waitress.
Okay. I knew Ryan Reynolds, but like I was, I was like, I don't remember who Dane Cook was in Blade.
Yeah, no, it was Hannibal King, which is really close to Hannibal Chow, which was in the Pacific Rim game or show or movie with I can't think of his name. Anyway, doesn't matter. But yeah, so the thing that I wanted to bring up, I wanted to get this conversation in when we were talking about the Xbox and what does, because we never brought up the Steam or GOG or Epic Store stuff. And I wanted to bring this up because Phil Spencer, during that interview, had talked about how he wanted to have other ecosystems accessible through the Xbox box. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's been stewing on my mind is there's been discussion about the legacy of Jim Ryan, right? And go with me on this. It's going to be a bit of a journey. But there's been a conversation around like the legacy of Jim Ryan and what did he bring to SIE? Mm-hmm. And it always gets compared to the sales, right? Sales are always kind of that main factor of like, well, did the PS4 outdo the PS2? And there's been a lot of conversation about why the PS2 is still held up as the GOAT when it comes to consoles. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it comes down to the time that it was in. The PS2 was the cheapest Blu-ray player or DVD player and CD player that you could get on the market, like unless it was like an actual like CD Walkman. So the sales of that during the time when people were going from VHS to DVD, there was a huge shift in medium, and the quality of content that was coming out during that time was vastly different than what we currently had. So the PS2 did really well because it was more than just a game console. It was your media hub. That was where you played all your DVDs. That is where you played all your CDs. That is where, you know, how many of you remember seeing those weird little symbols on your screen circle while you're listening to music on your TV? That's where you did everything, right?
You had one screen that did lots of things for you.
Yeah. And that's where I think Xbox is poised to take advantage of this situation. The Phil Spencer comments about seeing itch.io or Epic. That is what it is, right?
Yep.
Epic itch.io. And Epic. Okay. Mm-hmm. itch.io.
Totally a bait to get Steam to say yes.
See, that's why I keep wondering, like, if that's the play, because I get the intent. Like the intent is to try and bait Steam and be like, oh, we're gonna be there. You're not gonna get Epic. Don't get Epic. Get me. I want to be picked. I want to be the first one on the dodgeball team. Yep. I get that, but I also look at like the deals that they've had going on with Epic, and I think that the relationship there is strong as well too. I think either are very plausible. I think Epic would be an easier get because I think Epic recognizes the holding power that Steam has and wants to get their storefront and more people. Because they're currently just consistently upset about the fact that people only go to the Epic launcher to claim the free games. They want to sell games, and they have access to all of the PlayStation published games for PC. So that is an easier get than Steam, but I see where everyone's going with like they're trying to bait Steam into saying yes, right?
Right.
But the thing that Xbox's box can do that Sony's or Nintendo's won't is exactly what the PS2 was able to do for people at a time when they didn't have access to all that. Xbox players probably want to have access to PC games, and they most definitely want to have access to PlayStation exclusives. If Xbox wants to succeed, opening their storefronts or opening up their system to different storefronts to be able to allow access to different games and offer mouse and keyboard support through that, especially if they can figure out how to get like that done through Bluetooth, where it doesn't require a dongle, you can just have like a custom Xbox and mouse and keyboard kind of setup. That would be a thing that would cover both PC and console fronts the way that the PlayStation did for DVDs and games back in the early 2000s.
Yes, I agree. So are you asking me a question with this, or are you just making a comment?
I'm trying to put out the idea that if people are unsure if this is something that would actually happen, or if they're unsure why this would be something that people would want to say or do, I'm trying to let you know that the idea of a console does not have to revolve around the idea of where's my controller and where do I put this on the big TV. The idea of a console is this is a PC that has an ecosystem that is open to multiple games through different storefronts, and it becomes more of a box that is a hub the way your phone is for apps.
Yeah. Agreed. I can agree with that.
That's why I don't think that we're going to see consoles go away in the future, is because I think that they're going to evolve that way.
Okay. All right. Now that I understand, it took me a second, but now I'm with you. And I do agree.
I said it was a journey.
It was a journey, but it was a logical one. So your point is well taken. Your point is well taken. Nice. Okay. I think we answered Guy's question quite thoroughly. This one comes from Jose Martinez from the Nerd Chat, Chipotle Bear. He, by the way, is giving me instructions on how to take the show live. So I'm working on that. That's one of my projects for this break. He says, as I sit here watching a play at school, Luke, I think you teach middle school. As such, if you could see your kids perform any video game as a play, what would it be? And I'm going to expand this. I'd also like to know which games, Xbox franchises, properties we'd want to see on Broadway. So I have a lot of questions, or I have a lot of thoughts about what we might see and where, Logan, as a play. I think Gears of War would be an epically cool Broadway show.
Yeah.
And for kids, I would love to see, if it qualifies in the spirit of his question, Grounded. What does Grounded do as a school play? I'd really like to see that. I think that'd be a fun one.
I'm going to go with Blood Rain for both. Final answer.
Is Blood Rain a Xbox property?
No, but you know what? That's where I know it from.
Okay, fair enough. I can go with that.
No, an Xbox property that would be for kids. I like the idea of Grounded. That's a really good one. I would love to see like what a Halo Broadway play would look like.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they could manage that. Cause I've seen some stuff that they do in, Disney, I think it's Disney China or Chinese Disney. I can't remember what they call it over there, but the Disneyland that they have over in China,
okay.
They have a really cool, How to Train Your Dragon show. That has like, full on dragons. Like people are riding dragons that are flying through the actual sky and stuff on gurneys and stuff like that. But it's like full on. Like I would love to see kind of like what a Halo show Broadway style was if it had that kind of production value.
Yeah.
For kids, though, I have a really hard time seeing like what Xbox property would be good for them to actually like do a play of, because I can't really think of anything that really ties to Xbox. It's like kids friendly, man. It's like Blinks the Time Sweeper keeps coming to mind, and Banjo and Kazooie. And it's like, well, those are more like Nintendo and weird. So I don't really know. Like, I don't know. Maybe we get like cardboard suits and throw kids into, you know, like a mech assault or something. Like, I just don't know what would be a good one.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a fair, legitimate thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I failed you on that one, but I would like to see a Halo Broadway show. Honestly, I just want to see Blood Rain as like a broad, just full on like spurts of blood everywhere. Like I just want the whole stage covered in fake blood, you know, people on gurney, like jumping up. And I just wanted to be stupid. And the idea of a Nazi or like a Nazi killing vampire chick on a Broadway stage just absolutely destroys the sanctity of what like putting on a Broadway show is to me. Mm-hmm. And for some reason that whole counterculture idea just cracks me up.
I can get behind that.
I want it to be stupid and gory.
Again, I can get behind that too, just to watch kids do that. Okay. Fair.
It'd be really funny to watch a kid getting like pulled around.
Just mutilated. Okay. Well, Logan's in a dark place in his life, guys.
That's my happy place.
Yikes. Let's see here. This one comes from Edward Varnell. He says, do you think the first Xbox games will always be known as modern retro games? Would you ever revisit that era by playing some of those games and discuss what foundation Microsoft created for the brand and for Microsoft themselves as a company. Hmm. I think we're kind of doing that. If you look, a good example might be the Battlefront Collection is a, probably a good example of that. But yeah, it's a fair question. Those are kind of modern retro games, as it were.
It feels dirty. It feels really dirty.
Say modern retro.
To say, well, like what is like a modern, like, because retro to me is perspective, but obviously that's going to be like my Nintendo, Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But I get like, you know, Gen Alpha is going to look at like Xbox and GameCube and be like, oh, that's retro. And right. It's like, that's what there is. So I don't know that I would ever call the first Xbox games retro games. Mm-hmm. It's like the whole idea behind it's 10 years old. It's retro. It's like, is it though? I feel like maybe, you know, we've got 40 plus years worth of video games. Maybe we could look a little beyond just a decade of games being called retro.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not seeing, you know, old folks talking about, oh, I can't wait to play my Duck Hunt in my retirement home. Like that to me is retro.
Right. Okay. I think sprite based is a good barometer. If I see something that's sprite based, I tend to think retro, even if it's not a fair analogy.
I see where you're coming from. I anything that is like 32-bit and lower as far as intent, mm-hmm, and in design is probably where I would kind of label that. Mm-hmm. Like 64-bit close, 128, like sketching it. Like anything that's kind of where I see it, man. Like PlayStation 1, I can kind of see like, yeah, that is definitely, if it has a mini console out there, that's retro.
Okay. That's a neat thought.
if they've tried to suck in the generation that's like, hey, we've got this nostalgia drip for you and it's in the form of a tiny little mini console, mm-hmm, that to me is retro. I haven't seen the Xbox mini console out there yet, so I don't really think of that as retro. I don't know what modern retro is, Ed.
Yeah,
love you, buddy.
I think it's a cool concept. Ed's always got these really cool like ideas that I'm there for. So yeah. Let's see. We had one from, I believe it was Kevin Ainsworth, who asked us about a modern, or would we rather adopt a cat or play a new banjo game? Well, that's because I hate cats, and I think banjo is irrelevant. It's a muffin mog question for sure. Kevin Ainsworth over at the Project X talk. Here's the thing. I would definitely want to play a new banjo game because I'm so allergic to cats that I couldn't take care of it or give it the love that it deserves. I do think cats are evil and I don't like them. I'm a dog person through and through. But new banjo I don't think is necessary. I love the rumors about Spyro 4 from, you know, Twitter user X21534. It's a friggin' suggested password.
Did I not log out of that? I thought I logged out of that.
Uh-oh. The person's username was like literally like a suggest a stronger password type name. But like the idea of Spyro 4, of course it makes sense, right? But I don't think there's a big market for platformers. So
I disagree.
I think you can look at the Crash Bandicoot and Spyro series. Both of them, from their reignited style trilogy collections to Crash 4 to even Team Rumble, and say that those brands do not sell exorbitant amounts. Like they weren't cracking even 3-4 million. And so how relevant is that in the big picture? Right. Like I would think you need 10 million for a big.
Yeah. I think platformers are relevant. I think it takes an interesting platformer to be able to break through the noise that is the baseline shooter flavor of the week games. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that a banjo game could do that. I think that a banjo game could draw a lot more than say like a new Blinks game or a new IP. Mm-hmm. I do recognize that there is a cachet with that name. But as we've seen with like Nuts and Bolts, like you can make a Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, you know, 10 years before, you know, Tears of the Kingdom comes out, and it's not going to do well because, you know, the implementation is there, but maybe it's not the implementation. Maybe it's just the fact that it's a Banjo game. I don't know how Banjo Nuts and Bolts did so badly in Tears of the Kingdom can do so well when they're essentially the same game, but the difference is one is Zelda and one is Banjo.
That's the power of IP.
Yeah.
That's the power of IP. But
Banjo should be one of those IPs, right? It is one of those old N64 games that built a generation of 3D platformers for people.
I will tell you through and through, I think Xbox missed the mark on Super Lucky. I loved Super Lucky's Tale.
Yeah.
New Super Lucky's Tale. That was a great video game. Xbox had a chance to purchase and brand Super Lucky as a mascot platformer. And I think they really did miss the mark on doing that. It was a privilege to interview Paul Bettner years ago. He designed Words with Friends. Yeah. And now he's one of the few people working on creating like a Web3 game that doesn't suck, which I don't know if that's a thing. I don't even know if you can do that. I don't even understand Web3 enough to tell you.
Yeah.
But like Super Lucky's Tale, New Super Lucky's Tale, I should say, was really good. And it would be a shame to think that we don't see a mascot platformer unified with the Xbox brand. But you got to do something special with it. Like, how much does Ori sell? Ori is one of the best games ever made. How much does that sell? Not 10 million, I'll tell you that.
I think you need to have something that, like, there is a world where platformers work. I think Mario Odyssey is a good example of what you can do with a platformer that is fresh. I think we're starting to see something like that in the form of Plucky Squire. So I think that there's a potential there, but I think that it has to be something that kind of bridges the gap of like what we consider a platformer. Cause I think that there's two types of platformers out there. And I think that you can get both markets nowadays through game design. And I think that was one of the things that was really beautiful about Odyssey. And one of the things that I think that Plucky Squire really does kind of show that promise of being able to transition between 2 and 3D. I don't know that there's something that Banjo can do that will satiate the fans of it while doing something fresh enough that will be better than what Nuts and Bolts did. So I'm going to adopt another cat.
Okay, there you go. I forgot about the actual like questions and we're in there. I got like, the mascot platformers. That's funny. Well, look, Logan, that's a good place for us to kind of wrap it up, I think. I want to say thank you to all the people that are supporting us over at patreon.com/Xbox Expansion Pass. All of that is being put to good use. Supporting the show, softwares, as I try to take us live, that means StreamYard and subscriptions. So I'm grateful. If Patreon's not your jam, again, YouTube memberships is a thing. If that's for you, but please feel no obligation. I'm just trying to figure out ways for XEP to continue. And so if that's something you can do, rock on. If not, no worries. We just appreciate you listening and watching. I got scared. I will behind the scenes. I got scared because Ayn said to me something the other day in DMs. She's like, the only thing that Twitter has shown me from your timeline has been Patreon pitches. And I'm like, ugh, that made me feel slimy and gross. And it made me really upset and sad that like, that's what the algorithms were showing him. So I don't ever want that to be the feel. So if it has ever felt that way, allow me to apologize to anybody who's felt that way. That's never a goal.
The easiest way to get rid of those is if you go into the actual tweet itself. There's a specific link that you can click on. And if you go to that link, it'll actually take you to Patreon and that'll show you the tiers. And then you can choose like one of those tiers and then you can join the Discord and then delete Twitter and you won't have to worry about those tweets.
Okay. All right. I see what you did.
Twitter will still come to Discord, but you'll be in a better place.
Fair. Oh, goodness. All right.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't ever want to see slimy to our listeners. They are so supportive as it is. So I guess that's just the bigger point. That's what I was trying to say. All right. What you got for me, man?
Not a whole lot, honestly. We are like Keelhauled is coming out and the game's in a state right now. I'm a little worried. We did get a really awesome, like we did get a full on kind of preview of what 2024 is going to bring. So there's a lot of content. Good. Yeah, it looks really good. the caveat is that the game needs to work for all this to come out. But there's a lot of concerns that I think I have going into this week episode regarding like how some of the balancing for some of this content's going to go. But we did get some details on some of the other big events and stuff like that. But we've got like, we're literally like a couple weeks away from the PlayStation 5 beta. And I'm very curious to find out more information about what's going on with like the cross progression, like content, so how that's going to work, how it's going to link up. So I'm going to try and find, speculate and talk about that on this week's show. So that's going to be out there. If you want Sea of Thieves content, just search Keel Hauled Sea of Thieves podcast. You'll find me. Any of my socials and stuff are all easily find out there. If you just search LOGUN, you'll find all my stuff, even the stuff I don't want you to find. Yeah.
Yikes.
That's still on Google.
You follow the P Diddy, you can find Logan. There you go.
Nope. No. I don't want that heat. don't want that heat.
All right. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. Take care. Thank you.